because right now we're going to bring on our guest. And I'm just going to read this because, you know, I love to read. I'm getting in so much trouble for it. I'm like, I swear to God, I'm going to start getting better about what's it called? Oh, paraphrasing. I'm like, what's it called? Paraphrasing. But this I'm going to read. Is a cluttered closet a manifestation of a cluttered mind? Psychic debris, crowded. I said clouded closets earlier.
Same thing.
it is, right? Okay. Psychic debris, crowded closets is about understanding the relationship between the stuff in our head and what's under our bed. This book is a workbook, a journal, and a reflection of your desire to learn more about your connection to clutter and its impact on body, mind, and spirit. Open your heart and check your head, then your closets and cupboards. Consider these alternate ways out of the mess. Psychic debris, crowded closets creates the foundation to help you understand your relationship between physical and mental clutter. Please help me welcome author Regina Clark. I'm so happy to meet you.
It's Regina Lark.
What did you say?
Oh my God, Regina Clark.
Clouded. You did.
And clouded closets.
You got the whole CL thing going.
Okay,
on.
And do you know what's really even worse about that?
No.
This morning, when I was looking at my notes, it said Regina Clark.
Oh.
And I changed it. And I wrote Regina Lark. Whoa. And then I still pronounce Regina Clark.
Let's talk psychic debris, shall we?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, what exactly is stuck in my head? Regina Lark, yes. Welcome to
Thank
the
you
show.
Thank you very much.
So tell us, where do we start with this? So first of all, are you a psychic?
No.
Okay, so then this is sort of like the idea of what the clutter is in our minds,
right.
In our psyche.
Right.
Is that?
Another way to look at the term psychic debris is head trash. It's just the crap in your head that continues to filter through, that gives you all these crazy negative messages, positive, yeah. New edgy, that keeps you...
We're all about the edge here. We want the positive.
Exactly. And the head trash keeps you from moving forward on anything you want to do. And when I'm not a psychic... I'm not a psychologist. I'm actually a professional organizer.
Okay.
And my company is called A Clear Path Professional Organizing Homework Life. When I started this business 4.5 years ago, I thought I was going to make garages look pretty. And what I've discovered along the way is my idea of a pretty garage may not necessarily match somebody else's. And what I noticed is that people have really interesting relationships to their stuff.
Yes.
And... the head trash tells them why they cannot move forward on changing the relationship, on moving it out of their lives, on, you know, they stay stuck in the stuff. And there's nothing wrong with having a lot of stuff, but if it's cluttery and crowded and clouded and you feel like you're not able to clear it or move forward, or, you know, you want prosperity in your life, but you can't even open the freaking door. I mean, prosperity in metaphysical terms needs a place to glow and flow and move about. Well, if you've got these big paths of crowded clutter, how is the prosperity supposed to flow? So what I've recognized is a lot of the negative messages will prohibit somebody from moving forward. And so the work that I do now is helping people get that stuff out of their head, replace it with something more positive. Instead of, I don't know where to start, you can say, I'm going to just start here. I mean, because clutter is really, it's just stuff.
Yes.
So.
And it's also, so do you define clutter as sort of like the excess stuff? So meaning... you know, so we all need one set of dishes, obviously. So that's something that you need. So that's not necessarily considered stuff. But it maybe if you have like 4 sets of dishes, you know, do you really use, you know, maybe you have your grandmother's china that's, you know, like in the china hutch and that comes out like for Thanksgiving or something.
Maybe.
Okay. So now maybe you can justify 2 sets of dishes. But do you really need sets 3 and 4? That's talking about your everyday living. We're not even talking about the stuff that's in storage mm-hmm. in the garage. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if you have a 5th set of dishes that are now stored in the garage, that's definitely clutter. Is that correct? Like, is that?
Sure. I think clutter is how somebody personally defines it. It's in the work that I do. It's less about how many of these do you need. When's the last time you used it? I don't believe in rules about this. I heard you were saying earlier, I think it was you, about about feng shui and, mm-hmm. you know, the rules of feng shui. You don't put anything under the bed. From where I come from, there are no rules. It really is. I meet everybody where they live.
Okay.
So if they have very little storage and the only place you could put stuff is under the bed, then I'm not going to make that a bad thing. We just do it so that you can access it very easily. So getting back to the dishes, I encourage people to get a clear picture of what their higher purpose is. What's the higher good in their life? What do they want the room to reflect? And then you look at your stuff and you think, okay, what's in this space that'll allow me to move forward on that idea? And what isn't? What is in this room that is going to help me reach my higher good, and what is not? And it helps to switch this kind of thinking. Finding clarity about your space will help you switch your emotional relationship to the stuff. Because if it's fine china from Grandma Rose from back in the old country, and you don't even like soup, let alone ever use a soup tureen, mm-hmm. but it was Grandma Rose, and your grandmother said that this was special, and your mother said this was special, and now you have to think this is special. But if it's got no place in your life, and you're not that keen on it, but everybody gave it value, you tend to want to hold on to it because somebody else put a value on it.
So it's okay if I have the value on it because, like, because I do actually have my grandmother's china.
Of course you do.
And I cherish it because it's one of the few things I have that was my grandmother's. I really don't have anything of hers. And so I keep it, but obviously it's in storage because I don't have a house. I'm in an mm-hmm. apartment. Mm-hmm. But so because I have a value of it, then it's okay to have it. But if it were what you're saying, I would have permission to get rid of it if I only had it because maybe, quite honestly, if it were my great-grandmother's mm-hmm. who I had never met, mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. might not have the same
there
attachment to it.
Okay. And you have adopted the family value of this particular set of dishes. And I think that's fine. I believe that most people don't ask a whole lot of questions about the stuff in their space. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you just keep bringing it in.
Exactly. And it's funny that I use dishes because that was really where I was going for, was like when all of a sudden you start to have multiple sets of something that you don't need, that all of a sudden you're like, it's like you've already bought something and now all of a sudden you're out there and, oh, this is really cute, and it's just a different version of something else that you already have.
Right, right.
And are you really already using the one that you already have? It being any cuter is not going to make you use it anymore. You know, but I know I suffer from that, but I think we all suffer for that. But for me, it was having to learn how to, okay, if you're going to get this one just because it's cuter, then you have to get rid of the other one. Like, well, that was for me personally, because otherwise I was going to be a hoarder.
Right. But I'll say, too, there are no rules. And before you get to the place where you're going to buy something and then make a decision about what you already have, whether you're going to keep it or not, start at the store. You know, there's a lot of conspicuous consumption. There's a lot of consumerism. There's a lot of purchasing of things that we don't even know why we buy it. Mm-hmm. It just looks pretty. And what I see in a lot of people's homes are two things. One, houses, apartments are filled with broken promises and shattered dreams. People are buying all these things to make themselves look better, feel better, sound smarter. I mean, all of these ways in which we're supposed to, that are things that are supposed to improve our life. But what we don't really do is look within and see the good there. I mean, I don't mean to get airy-fairy about this, but really, happiness is an inside job.
Yeah.
And no amount of makeup or... I ask a lot of women, how many black pairs of pants do you really need? Mm-hmm. You know, no amount of black pair of pants are going to make you look or feel much different than the other pair. And so it's really about being a much more conscious consumer and finding that which will uplift and elevate within. I tell a story in the book of... I got out of the shower once, and when you get out of the shower, you'll agree with me. You're most raw.
You know? I do all my best. That's when I do all my best thinking every day.
You're most exposed. Mm-hmm. And one day I was looking in the mirror right after the shower, and I saw, I noticed again the age spots on my face. And I'm like, God damn it. Regina, look at, you're getting old. And I had a moment of clarity. I looked at myself directly in the eyes in the mirror, and I said, Regina, Why can't you stand here and say, nice shoulders, and just move on?
Yeah.
Why is the automatic default position the head trash, the psychic debris? Because that does not serve me at all. And now when I look in the mirror, I go, nice shoulders. I mean, I realize that that was just as easy to say as the other stuff. And I thought, well, what the hell? Just well, it's, go it's, for the positive. It, well,
but the thing is, it's technically as easy to say, meaning the act is technically as easy. But it's actually harder because we have been trained to think the worst. I mean, our ego is designed to make us set us up to fail. It's to think our worst thoughts. So that's why it's we have to sort of train ourselves. But that's a wonderful thing that you're saying, because that's, you know, that's the whole reason I'm doing the show. I wanted a place where it's like, let's talk about what's right in the world.
Right.
You know, because it's the same exact thing. You hear nothing about on the news except for everything that's going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The news rarely will sit there and say, guess what? Something really great happened today.
Regina's got nice shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and so we're almost being conditioned like this on this sort of like big global level. So it's no surprise that by the time you get to your raw moment in the bathroom, once again, your predisposition to not, you know, to be like, well, let's see what's wrong with me, because that's how we're sort of trained to think. So that being said, you've written this book that's sort of like saying,
let's knock it off.
Yeah, knock it off. Let's how do we start telling ourselves nice shoulders, and especially when we're amongst our things, how do we, you know, sort of like differentiate what, you know, like what's good and what's clutter, to sort of create that same space, you know. I'll just say, and because of course I'm wanting to give you a question, but for me personally, I've always noticed this about myself, because I grew up very poor, enough to where like my mother, she had like a boyfriend of hers like build our couch, and by build our couch I mean it was a few 4x4s, a piece of plywood. She took some
foam.
She took foam and covered it with fabric. That was our couch. Our coffee table was one of those big wooden spools, you know, that they found. I mean, it was like, so we grew up poor, and there was like, not, you know, one painting hanging on the wall that one of her friends painted. You know what I mean? Like that was
poor.
That was how I grew up. And so for me, once I became an adult and I got my own apartment and I started collecting things, I'm saying all this because I want your advice on this. But I'll never forget, I had my first apartment. I was probably like 22 years old and I had a roommate. But I remember sitting in there and looking around, and the majority of the things were mine. And I was, you know, it was like the coffee table and the dishes and the curtains. It was like one of those moments where I just finished cleaning the house. And so everything was put away and in its place. And I just remember sitting there and feeling so overwhelmed to be among my things. And I had such a pride in my possessions, in my things. And that sort of carried with me. It did get to a point, especially by around 2000, where it was too much, because I wasn't letting go of anything because of exactly what you're saying. It was like I was giving too much value to every possession. So it was like, because these were my first plates that I, you know, or my first wine glasses that I ever had. You know, like, even though now I've like graduated to, because now I can afford nice wine glasses, just because they were my first wine glasses. They were cheap, you know, but now I'm having a hard time parting with them. That was a real process for me. But also, you know, watching Oprah and everything else, you learn about, you have to make room for more to come in, which is this whole, you know, this you know, again, going with like the flow that you're talking about. And, you know, and not just about, it doesn't mean like you have to make room for more plates. You'd have to get rid of your plates for more room for more plates. It's what you're talking about. This psychic debris that if all of a sudden I start to feel cluttered or claustrophobic amongst my things, then I'm not, that's an energy that I'm not allowing in. So what's your advice in that, as far as like how you sort of move through that? Cause I know that I'm not the only one who has hung on to stuff from high school, from my early 20s that really isn't serving me other than maybe reminding me of that time.
Right. You are laying out a lot of typical scenarios.
I was hoping I was hoping I wasn't just rambling on for nothing, because I was like, I knew that if I could get this out, that I wanted you to attack it from all angles.
Okay, and I can. I can. You just gave me a big garage.
Perfect. You know, we don't even want to talk about my garage, but keep going.
Well, I do want to talk about your garage because, gosh, there's a lot I can say, so I will start. First of all, any space that we move into, that's the space we have. And what I see is a lot of people disrespecting that space by putting way too much into it than it was reasonably designed to accommodate. And so we get storage units.
Yeah, and which I refuse to do.
Okay.
For that very reason, I know Yay. Exactly what you're. I know exactly what you're saying. I refuse for that very reason.
I see the commercials for public storage, and they have romanticized the past, and mm-hmm. it's if you want to hold on to these grotesque antlers, you know, from the fraternity that mm-hmm. you belong to. Don't let them go. Hold on to them in public storage. And
for $200 a month.
Hokey smoke. And the ad will read, got too much stuff. And I'm screaming at the television, call an organizer. And they go, call public storage. I'm like, no. So there's a proliferation of actually storage units in prisons in the United States. I don't know what the connection is, but I'm sure there is. But there is a proliferation of storage units. And I think it has everything to do with our relationship to the past. And a couple of months ago, I had this very clear vision in my head. And in talking with a client this particular day, I heard her say over and over again, I'm holding on to this because someone gave it to me and I love that person and it's really important. And then they're holding on to something over here saying, well, I'm going to hold on to this because I may need it someday. And so they've got their hand in the past and their hand in the future. And I'm not quite sure what's happening in the present. It seems to be a lack of presentism. And when we're not in our presence, we're not present to our presence. Does that make sense? We're always looking ahead and behind. And when I think about our sentimental attachments to stuff, so many people hold on to report cards and papers that they wrote in grammar school and college and high school. And I look at these things as they're items representing a moment of time in our life cycle. And if this item were not in our space, it does not mean that event did not happen. Mm-hmm. And if we can come to terms with relying upon what's in our heart and what's in our head, then if somebody said, oh, I took this history class in high school and history was my worst subject, and you say, oh, I wrote a kick-ass history paper and got an A, you'll never forget that because you had a teacher in high school whose history that told stories and didn't make you memorize dates, and that's why you're able to do so well on the paper. So the paper is representative of one thing that you did. You wrote the paper, but surrounding the paper is a cool teacher, is a subject that intrigued you, and so the paper is just a part of that. Do you need to keep the paper? Well, if it's not causing clutter and if you have a place to put it and it's not going into storage, then sure, of course keep the paper because it fills your heart. If you're trying to downsize and trying to let go of boxes, and well, let go of the paper. It's like bowling trophies. The other thing that you said brought.
Well, so you're saying keep the memory, let go of the item.
Sure, or take a picture of it.
Keep the feeling, because there is a feeling that's attached to it.
Yes.
There's a feel, but like you said, that piece of paper doesn't represent how the teacher responded to you, or the teacher coming up and giving you a pat on the back and being like, "This is a great paper."
Right.
You can't replicate that feeling, and right. I think sometimes that's why we hang on to the paper mm-hmm. as if to try to remember that feeling. But what you're saying is we can actually get rid of the piece of paper.
I think
because
so.
We're going to hang sure. on to the feeling.
Well, and I like the way you put that because I noticed that the other part of holding on to these old memories, it's as if we're never going to have that feeling again.
Mm-hmm.
And it represented, we see that it represented such an important time in our life cycle that what if we can't recapture it?
Yeah.
It's similar to people hold on to greeting cards for every holiday, every birthday, every occasion. Greeting card
no,
city.
I know
you can't relate.
No, you're hitting on every single. Like, I'm like, I sit here and I think to myself before you got here, and you even heard me say it in one of my sentences of my long rambling paragraph to you. I'm like, you know, in 2000 it became a problem, but then I started getting really good at it. You have hit on every single thing that I still have issues with. because I do. I have a hard time. I will throw away most greeting cards. My boyfriend, my boyfriend is the total opposite. He gets a greeting card. It's his birthday. That card maybe will stay in the house for a week. Unless if you've maybe written like a paragraph, it might stay 2 weeks. Like I'll watch like his best friend send something from back home and he'll like, he loves it. And then all of a sudden, like 2 days later, I'll see it in the trash. I'll be like, oh my, why is this in the trash? And then what do I have? I have boxes. Every so often I'll come across a stack of greeting cards and I'm always like, I'm going to have them. But then the thing about greeting cards, and I'm to go on a tangent, I come across a greeting card, like if it's like an aunt or a grandmother who's died and there's something about their handwriting.
Yes. Yes.
So you brought it up.
I'm right
to
there
that.
With you. Okay. So here's my standpoint on greeting cards. I worked with somebody once and she has 5 children and 3 sisters. Mm-hmm. And she had a card from every one of them
for
over
every event.
Many years.
Yeah, that's too much.
Too much. And we were sorting cards and we were on the middle of the floor and we had cards everywhere around us. And I'm just starting my business as an organizer and I'm saying, let go, let go, let go. And she stopped and she goes, Regina, my sister thought of me. She went to the store. She bought a card. She brought it
exactly.
home. She signed the card.
And they're expensive
she
these days.
She stamped and addressed the card.
Expensive.
She mailed the card. And you're telling me to throw the card away. I said, Brenda, did you read the card? And she says, yes. I said, is there anything in that card that expresses a sentiment differently from what you know about your sister? Is there something there that she wrote something so profound, so enlightening, so feel good? Or does it say, love, Brenda? Keep the ones like you. You look at this, you look at the paragraph and you think, wow, I never knew this person felt this way. This makes me feel good. And I bet if I open this card in 10 years, it will make me feel good. And I'm right there with you.
So those are okay to keep.
Unless they're not. Unless
he wants a definite answer. I know what to keep and what to throw away.
I know there's no rules, but I want some permission.
If it's causing you clutter, then think twice about it. You know,
So am I allowed to maybe have like a space, like maybe like a small box?
Yes.
And only whatever fits in that box.
Perfect.
That gets to stay there.
Perfect.
And then if it doesn't fit, then so sometimes you gotta filter through. And maybe you don't, and you certainly don't need multiple cards. Like one of my best friends, Shaughnessy up in Seattle, she writes, we dated in high school.
Oh.
So we've got letters. We got letters. We got breakup letters.
You might
we've
want
got
to publish
love letters.
Those.
Exactly. And but she writes every single time. It's mm-hmm. you know, there's so much mm-hmm. love and pride, and her cards they overwhelm me, and mm-hmm. they're beautiful. And but so in theory, what you're saying is that it would sort of be like I could keep like one or two, especially because they do kind of similarly say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need to be keeping all of them. I tend to keep all of them because I'm always like, this is so beautiful, and it's exactly what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it is 5 years later.
Right.
Sometimes it's 23 years later.
There's no room in your apartment.
I know. But which
bottom line,
Regina, I never want you to leave because that's the other that there's and you didn't even get to finish your sentence, but you did that thing where you said you have one hand in the past and one hand in the future. My garage is my hand in the future.
Oh, do you have a garage?
Don't get me started.
Uh-oh.
I've heard it called garage. I've heard it called storage. What is it, Bob?
Storage. And But it's where I keep that hand in the future because mm-hmm. I keep a lot of the stuff in the garage is always stuff because we're in this tiny, tiny mm-hmm. one-bedroom apartment that was mine and served me fine when it was me. Then my boyfriend moved in. And so it's like – so now, you know, the idea is someday we're going to be in a house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And someday it's going to be a 2 to 3-bedroom house.
Right.
Because I'm going to have an office and we're going
to have
a guest room.
Right.
And so I want them – and so why –
future.
And I get it because you've already just said something and I saw the light bulb go off in my head.
Whoa.
Which is – the fact that I'm hanging on to this stuff, and the truth of the matter is, when it comes time for me to want to let's say I have that 3-bedroom house, when it comes time for me to want to put to furnish that room,
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna want to go out and get stuff. Then I'm not gonna want this stuff that's collecting dust
right.
in my garage.
No, right. You're gonna want new stuff.
Exactly, which goes to the whole thing about that's also part of the metaphor for get rid of the old stuff so the new stuff can come in. Like it's really that's in addition. To
I think so
the mm-hmm. the psychological thing that we're actually mm-hmm. also talking about
mm-hmm.
too
mm-hmm.
which is that I might not ever get to the place of being able to have a 3-bedroom house because I've got all this crap weighing me down.
It metaphysically speaking, you may be right. There's a couple of more things I wanted to mention with the signature. Both of my parents are alive.
Oh, yes. Sir.
And I'm grateful for that. And I get a birthday card from each one every year. And I always hold on to the last card that they gave me. And I keep my cards up for 2 weeks. I do one more read through, and I take the two parents' cards, and I replace last year's birthday parents' cards with this year's birthday parents' cards because I want their signature. I want to see my mom's signature saying, I love you. Yes. Mm. And that is really important to me. And so when I did my own, I did a move, big transition in my life from living in a big house to a small apartment. And I brought with me those boxes that I've been carrying around my whole life. And I dumped the contents of each box on a countertop, and I just laid it out. And I'm like, what is here for my higher good? And I had grandparents, I had stuff from everybody ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. And what I did is I just picked representative samples from each person, and now they all reside in a gallon-sized baggie. <You
know? laughs> Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's all in one box. And I don't even remember what I let go of that day, but I do know what's in that box. And the other thing I want to say, and I know we don't have much time, when you bring something into your space, whether you recognize it or not, you immediately give it value.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
And toilet paper has value.
Yes.
But when we use up all the paper, the empty roll, the toilet paper roll no longer has value. It had value to hold the paper. And most people, unless you have a hoarding disorder,
yeah.
you can easily let go of the empty roll.
Yes.
We don't look at the rest of our stuff as having lost its value along the way. Because we change, it's like you said about the furniture, your aesthetic, your value will more than likely change by the time you move into your wonderful home.
Yeah.
And the things that you've already put in your life that you value today probably don't have the same value.
They don't. There's a couple pieces of furniture that are in my garage right now that I know that I've hung on to, that I know that in this very second...
Bye-bye.
I can get rid of, this very second. Really quickly, because the chat room just asked, what about children's art projects?
Ah, very good question. I encourage parents to take pictures of all the art, because every piece is a gem. But you know, as your child reaches a certain age, when they can start making some decisions. They know good from bad or good art from bad art. And so one suggestion is to purchase a long Rubbermaid storage bin, mm-hmm. the long kind, long short, and put all their artwork in it for the year. And at the end of the year, go through it together and pick out the five best pieces and hold on to those. And or pick out the five best, take pictures, and then recycle. They're going to do...
So it's the same concept, the same thing from earlier about sort of like even with my greeting cards. Like, I'm allowed to create a space that says this is my space for greeting cards that I want to keep, and I don't get any more space. Mm-hmm. So it's up to me to determine which are the ones of value that I want to keep, and the rest can go away.
Right, and I like what you said. Keep it to the size of the box that you're going to put it in. I just worked with somebody the other day, and she had a basket of shoes, and the shoes were everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And in the basket. And mm-hmm. I said, let's keep the shoe collection
in the
just
basket.
So it fits in the basket. Let that be, because people don't ask themselves, what does it mean to have enough? Come up with a number. How many pairs of black pants is enough? 50? 5? I mean, quantify it if you can. If you see that you have a lot of the same thing with a tweak in the style or the color or whatever, decide how many of these things is really enough. Do it with every area of your space. And it really is more about how you feel walking through your space. I think I have very few things. I'm kind of a minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
More than anything, because I'm not a good consumer. I eschew labels. And I don't like being inconvenienced. I really don't. I don't want to move something to get to put it back. I don't want to be inconvenienced. So my space where I live is all about ease of use. And that works for me.
Rinji, we are completely out of time because we have a whole other guest, and I have 10 other questions. I want you to come back.
Thank you.
Here's what I want to have happen.
Okay.
because I know that my boyfriend's going to listen to this.
Uh-oh. Are you in trouble?
And I know it's going to cause some conversation. It's going to open up some dialogue at home, which is a positive thing.
It's a good thing.
It is. Edgy. And here's what I'm going to propose, because I'm getting your book.
Okay.
I want to tell everybody where to get your book in a second. But I think I want to go. I'm going to go through this like in the next few weeks with my stuff.
Nice.
And make some adjustments. I'm going to go through your book, and I want to have you come back on in like a month or so, and we're going to talk. And I'm going to say like what I went through. And
send me pictures.
Yes, we're gonna go to that. So once again, the book is called Psychic Debris. Crowded Closets. It's Regina Lark is the author. You can get the book at Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. And your website is aclearpath.net.
Yes, aclearpath.net.
And if you have questions or if you want to reach out to Regina, her Twitter is at aclearpath.
Correct.
So I know you're smart. You're smart to be watching me because I'm like extra hyper conscious of it. Regina, you were a delight. And honestly, there's so many more things going on in my mind that we would have done.
Nice.
But we unfortunately we have to take a break because I am excited. I know Courtney Merritt is in the green room and we're going to bring her on in a second. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to say goodbye to Regina. But Regina, this is. You have my brain alive and awake right now. I know, and I'm like, oh. But you know what? I think the most important thing that you did, it's about giving permission to say it's okay to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, and it's again, I love it. And for anybody who didn't see it on camera, who's listening to this in the podcast, who won't see it on film, Regina reached her left arm out to the front, and she reached her right arm out to the back. To say, you know, you're holding on to the future with one hand and you're holding on to the past with the other hand. That was what was so powerful to me, was that realization, again, of what I, that's exactly what I'm doing. But it's there's so much of my stuff that I hang on to for the sentimental reasons, mm-hmm. which you're saying is okay to hang on to some of it, but I don't need to hang on to all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing with the future. It's okay to hang on to some of it because there is some stuff that you're, you know, but also, by the way, don't forget that when you're saying that, you're saying you want to put some of your stuff from the past into your future.
Yeah.
You know, like the metaphors are endless here.
Sure.
You know, but it's also remembering that if you're putting this stuff that's in your future, that's from now or from in your past, what kind of future are you creating? You know, you're creating like a
future of the past.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Instead of saying no, when I get to that place.
Yes.
So I think part of that is we hang on to that stuff as in saying, okay, I know that I'm going to have a 3-bedroom house because I have this stuff.
Right.
And it's like, no, that's not right. The because. The because is within.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. This is all within. Yeah. And so I just love that visual, and I'm seeing that visual in my head and thinking to myself, I can get rid of a lot of stuff.
Sweet.
I can get rid of a lot of stuff, but it's, and the whole thing is it's you giving me the permission, which sounds so silly, but just hearing you say you're allowed to get rid of some of that stuff, that's resonating with me.
Maybe you should do a before and after. You should take some pictures of like some things
of the garage that we can barely climb into.
Exactly.
Yeah. You should take some pictures and put them on Twitter and see, and just, you know, like, okay, here's some things that I have. And then
Regina, I'm bringing you back in like a month.
Hopefully my app will be ready by then. Clear just 10, then do it again. And you can.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, I like that. Okay. We really are taking a break, right. And we're going to come right back with Courtney Merritt. Thank you so much, Regina.
Thank you.
Great,
thank you. Cut.
All right.
Put it together and what have you got? Be.